Good evening, Charles Moskowitz here, doing a late edition of the program. We're live on subscribing stations, live streams, and also podcasted on iTunes and all of the usual stations. It's an honor to welcome Alex Newman on the program. Alex is an award-winning international journalist, educator, author, and consultant. Alex just returned from the COP27 conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, which is in the Sinai in Egypt. Events at that conference very well may shape the future in ways that we need to understand, because some of those ways are not exactly in our interest as sovereign citizens. Alex, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Charles.
All right. So let's just do a quick thumbnail on what transpired at this conference.
Well, on the official side, they did what they do every year. They negotiated and partied for 2 weeks, and then went into overtime to come up with the desperate last chance agreement to save the world from man-made global warming. They got a big agreement. The biggest news out of there was that they agreed to establish a permanent wealth transfer mechanism, where basically Western people, Americans, Europeans, Japanese, Australians, Israelis, I assume, will basically be held responsible for what they describe as loss and damage. So every time there's a wildfire, a hurricane, a drought, a flood, whatever, that's assumed to be caused or at least intensified by the fact that the Western world industrialized first and built cars and built factories and it put CO2 into the atmosphere. And so we have to pay for that then. We have to pay for those damages. And the exact details will be worked out between now and the next one. But all the governments of the world, all the UN member states committed to that. But I think there's even, and we can talk more about the fine points of the agreement later. But I think the biggest news out of there, Charles, what I focused a lot of my time on was the ushering in of a new system of morality, a new system of ethics. And, you know, we've been warning. I went over there with the New American Magazine. My colleague William F. Jasper warned, I actually just reread his article 20 years ago. He warned that this was a religious movement, that they had, you know, very, very subversive aims from a religious perspective. And at the time, they would have denied it. Well, this time, the UN Office of Religious Affairs teamed up with a bunch of religious leaders from around the world, the Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development, based in Jerusalem, also the Peace Department, based in New York, I believe, and several other major religious organizations. And they had everybody there. They had Jews, Muslims, Christians, evangelicals, Catholics, Orthodox. They had pagans, Hindus. They flew in some shaman guy from the Amazon rainforest. And they unveiled what they originally had described as the new Ten Commandments. Very, very significant. Yep, they actually incredibly.
They seem to forget that the original Ten Commandments were written by God.
That's exactly right. But Charles, they actually walked up to the top of Mount Sinai. They did this big ceremony. They called it a climate repentance ceremony. Mm-hmm. And they repented of their climate sins, their CO2 emissions, not taking care of Mother Earth the way she deserves to be treated. And I actually spent, believe it or not, 35 minutes with the ringleaders of this thing. That interview is posted on Rumble and some of the other platforms. And I asked them about this, and they're like, yeah, we got some bad press about the new Ten Commandments. So, you know, we need to be more clear. This is not a replacement for the Ten Commandments. We're going to call this an addendum to the Ten Commandments. They said they're ushering in what they described as a third covenant, but they were still working on the details. As far as I know, they're not consulting with the creator of the heavens and the earth. But
I saw something about this on Deutsche Welle, which is the American-German television program. Where, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that there was a scene where they smashed these Ten Commandments.
Like Moses did when he came down and saw the Israelites worshiping this golden calf. Right. So yeah, that's what they did.
Now, before we go into that, I just want to reiterate that one of the big pieces of news coming out of this, something that is being discussed, is this idea of reparations by the major industrial countries to third world countries, basically third world dictators. And we're talking to the tune of trillions of dollars over time. One of the chief architects of this was John Kerry, who is the present regime's main point person for these sorts of things. And that it's ridiculous, it's completely bogus, even if you accept the theory of global warming, because the countries that are going to be receiving these reparations are some of the world's biggest coal producers, oil producers, communist China, not to mention, and the biggest polluters. So it's obviously an open and unabashed redistribution of wealth, a basically a wearing away of the sovereignty and the rights of all of the respective nations, and a move toward convergence toward a one world government. Now, what was the influence in this event of Schwab, of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum?
Well, they had a booth there. The World Economic Forum had a booth there. We could never find anybody there from the World Economic Forum willing to talk to us. But yeah, the World Economic Forum, they actually signed a strategic partnership with the United Nations some years ago. I think it was 2018, maybe 2019, to help implement the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which is basically the roadmap for global totalitarianism that all the governments of the world agreed to. Obviously, our Senate never ratified this, but Barack Obama signed it and treated it as a done deal. But the World Economic Forum, they were kind of ever present, right? And the whole time that this was going on, they were putting out stuff on their website. They did a little video with Johan Rockström. He's the head of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Change Research or whatever it is. Very, very, they call him one of the world's top climatologists. He's a total lunatic. And he said, oh, you know, here we are talking about voluntary behavior changes and consumer decisions. We need to be talking about radical changes in politics, radical changes in government. He said, we're talking about $100 billion a year. That's not even close. We need $4 to $6 trillion a year to save the planet. So this is the kind of nonsense that the World Economic Forum is pumping out while all these governments, NGOs, dictatorships, and of course, people dependent on this climate gravy train are meeting at the UN summit. And I did run into John Kerry there, and I asked him about some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. He was wearing a face diaper, and so it was kind of hard to understand him. I asked him about, you know, Trump, because Trump announced he was running for office while we were there. In fact, the night before, I ran into John Kerry, and I said, "Hey, man, what's going to happen if Donald Trump gets elected?" He said climate change is a hoax. He got the process started to get us out of the Paris Agreement. And his goon squad translated for me. They said what Kerry said was that I'm just focused on the work here. And then I asked him, you know, are you going to commit the United States to this climate reparations fund, or are you going to be pledging American taxpayer dollars? And of course, the Republicans had just retaken control of the House. So, you know, that was a perpetual elephant in the room, no pun intended. And the guy said, boo. And I eventually figured out that what he said was, we're still learning about this, but he did. He signed up to this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, whether the Republicans are going to agree to pay for this, I think that's a whole nother question. But right. The assumption is right now that Americans, Europeans, a whole bunch of governments actually specifically pledged that they were going to help fund this climate reparations mechanism. But, you know, you talked about the communist Chinese. That's the other main elephant in the room. I think what looking at communist China is all you really need to know that even the cult leaders, even the leaders of this whole operation do not believe this themselves, right? The basic data, communist China emits more CO2, almost double the carbon dioxide of all the nations of the West combined, right? All the right. European mm-hmm. nations, America, all of them combined, communist China emits twice the level of CO2. They are building more coal-fired power plants between now and coming online by 2025 than the entire U.S. stock of coal-fired power plants. And yet nobody's talking about China. I asked everybody about China because this is the obvious question. If you're so concerned about CO2, why are we demonizing the United States where our CO2 emissions are dropping like a rock? Why are we continuing to shut down our power plants so that we can ship all that production, ship all that energy, ship all that manufacturing, ship all those jobs to China where it's going to take drastic more CO2 per unit of production? And nobody wanted to talk about it. So, well, China's building windmills and China's lifting people out of poverty with stolen Western technology. That's the part that was left unsaid. And, you know, that's all you really need to know as far as I'm concerned. If these people right. truly believe that CO2 was dangerous, the last thing in the world that they would want to do is shift our production and our manufacturing over to China. And yet that's what they're doing with a big smile on their faces.
Right. I mean, and it goes to the general World Economic Forum agenda, which was articulated by Klaus Schwab in a book that was released just before the COVID lockdowns, where he predicted this and said that there would be an attempt to exploit it. And that is a kind of a world biopharma informal control through electronic passports and forced vaccines to everyone, including children as young as three. There's shortages in manufacturing, planned shortages, planned food shortages. Several food manufacturers have had their plants blow up this year. You've got a diminution of currency in the form of this recent implosion of crypto with this guy who was laundering money to the Democratic Party. But the main thing is that now the Federal Reserve has said that within the next 6 to 12 months, they're going to be issuing a cryptocurrency, which means basically a digitization of currency and a move and a reduction of control by nations and by individuals of their own money. The end of private property, everyone will be renting, we'll all be eating bugs. You know, it's not exactly a great view, but
that's what they're saying openly.
Oh, I know. And, yeah. You know, what used to be called conspiracy really is no longer. It's just, this is what's happening. And I think that it's being reported quite openly. And that's what we're looking at. And this is the conference that you just attended, Alex. We were right in the belly of the beast. Now, let's talk about the religious aspect of this. I understand that there's this new religious structure being built, if I'm not mistaken, I think in Dubai, where you have like Jewish, Muslim, and Christian buildings all kind of in a triangle. And they're talking about this merge between the world's religions, which of course is complete heresy for any of these religions, certainly for Judaism and definitely for Catholicism. You know, you can't have that. But was there any talk about that sort of jargon? Did you hear any of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely ubiquitous, Charles. And this is kind of the crescendo. We've been building up to this moment for a long time. They've been having a lot of conferences. Just a couple of years ago, I wrote about a conference right before COVID hit that they held in Germany, the World Parliament of Religions for Peace. And Vatican played a big role. They had evangelicals, Orthodox. They had different Jewish sects. They had Hindus, Buddhists, every kind of pagan that you could imagine, demon worshipers, all united. They acknowledge that there are some theological differences, but they said, really, we all have the same values. We all kind of believe the same thing. It's just different ways to God. And they actually committed. They put down on paper a final agreement. They said, we commit that our religions are going to work toward human development in alignment with and based on the UN Agenda 2030. And so this conference, this freak show, was funded by American taxpayers. It was funded by the United Nations. It was funded by George Soros. So this has been a long process. Just a month or two before this UN conference, they had a major meeting that the Pope attended in Astana in Kazakhstan, which is really very rapidly becoming kind of this mecca of ecumenism and one world religionism. And so they've been building up to this moment. And then they really came out of the closet at this UN climate summit. And what was so interesting is that even the secular side of the UN was openly trumpeting the ideas that were being brought in through this religious side of it. And I'll give you a clear example. One of the most important documents that the UN released before this summit, we actually went through it with a fine-tooth comb. And I wrote about this extensively. People can find this at The New American. And they actually say in plain English, I mean, you know, a lot of times you have to kind of decipher what they're saying, but this was in plain English. They said that the current system of ethics evolved with humanity over thousands of years. In other words, our moral code evolved with humans, which, of course, if you believe that God delivered the moral law to Moses on Mount Sinai, that's heretical. That's insane. That's absurd. Didn't evolve with humanity. And then they say that, this current ethical system, this moral system that we have is no longer suited to the world that we live in because it hasn't resulted in proper care for the planet and the environment. And so they openly say we need a new code of morality and ethics that takes proper account of the environment and taking care of the earth. And so in tandem with that, you have all these religious leaders from around the world coming together and marching to the top of Mount Sinai. They did another ceremony in Jerusalem. They did one in London. And they said, these are the new Ten Commandments, the addendum to the Ten Commandments. And so what's happening here is, and actually I interviewed Yonatan Narrell. He's a rabbi, the founder of the Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development. I couldn't give away, you know, my true beliefs. I'm there as a journalist. I'm asking questions, just trying to get information. But the way this guy talks, all these guys, like, yeah, we need to leverage faith communities to get involved in climate activism. Excuse me. You know, our faith is not something to be leveraged for climate activism or any other kind of political purpose. Right. And you know, that sounds really offensive to people that you're going to leverage my faith community to do climate things. So really dangerous stuff happening. And I think that's really the biggest story out of this whole conference, absolutely. Charles, is that they're coming out of the closet with this now.
No, it's it seems to be the religion of the UN, which is theosophy, established by Blavatsky back in the 1870s. The UN meditation room has this rock in it that is supposed to pierce the, you know, deep into the crust of the earth. It's very New Age oriented, and the philosophy was basically a merge between the New Age and Darwinism, you know, as alleged science, and also of Julian Huxley, who was the founder of UNESCO, and who talked about the new religion being this sort of secular evolutionism. He had picked up the theme from the Nazis, and the idea was to infiltrate all religions of the world and leave in place the trappings of the religion, leave in place the ceremony and the windows and the incense or whatever it is that's unique, but replace the belief system, the philosophy, with this evolutionary humanism. So given that this is what they're coming out with openly, they're not talking about what they believe in. All they're talking about, as you say, is leverage, uniting with each other. And it seems the only actual thing they believe in is global warming. But other than that, is there any kind of are they coming out openly with any kind of a theology that we could look at?
Yeah, it's interesting that you ask that. I got from the founder of this Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development something called an eco-Bible. And I have it with me. I should have brought it. It's over on my bedstand. I was going to take a look at it. But these are ecological and environmentalist commentaries on the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, you know, Hebrew Bible, Genesis, Leviticus, Exodus, etc. And really what this guy is arguing is that God really is an environmentalist, and he really wants us to be hyper concerned about the well-being of the planet. And that really this is what all religions believe, that this has just been kind of lost in translation. And so they are coming out with a theology, but I think at its core, you're absolutely right, Charles. Very few people know what you just said, but that's a fact. And it's becoming more and more obvious. Some decades ago, the UN, in fact, UNESCO came out with what they call the World Core Curriculum. And the writer of this thing, Robert Mueller, he was the Assistant Secretary General of the UN. They openly said this needs to be taught in every school on the planet. And then if you look at the teacher's manual for this, right in the foreword, in the guy's own handwriting, he says that the basis of this World Core Curriculum is to be found in the teachings of Alice Bailey by the Tibetan teacher. She called him Jeval Kul. And of course, he was not Tibetan nor a teacher. He was a spiritual entity that Alice Bailey, who was a disciple of Helena Blavatsky, claimed to be communicating with. And so she wrote all these books. She claimed to be channeling these things from this spiritual entity. About the coming new age and how, you know, the worst thing in the world was these people who wanted to be separate, right? Of course, and Jews and Christians both have that in their scriptures. Right? You right. should be separate. You should be holy. You should be a light unto the nations. You don't want to be part of the world. You don't want to be involved in the practices and things. In fact, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament says that the things that the pagans are sacrificing to idols are really sacrificing to demons. And so the idea that we have the same religion, just different ways of reaching God, is simply preposterous with a plain reading of the scriptures. But this is the argument that they're making. And I think when you boil it all down to its essence, you know, they don't come out and say it openly yet, but this really is just a repackaged theosophical Luciferian understanding of reality that's completely incompatible with Judaism, Christianity, or even Islam.
Right. I mean, Alice Bailey was the founder of the Lucifer Trust.
That's right. The Lucifer Publishing Company.
That's right. Which changed its name to the Lucis Trust. And it's you can go to their website. It's very it's totally left-wing stuff. It's very influential at the UN and very openly so. And that you could say that it's the kind of the buttressy of the religion of this world order. But they, as you note, they're pantheists. They don't believe that God created the universe. He created man in his image. He created a separate existence. It's all one, they believe. It's very, I don't want to say it's Eastern religion, because I don't think Eastern religion really even believes this. It's all like everything has to be equal, absolutely. We have to become a one world and colony where everyone is de facto equal. It's just a rehash of communism. And it's just the latest. And what's troubling with this, in a way, it's even worse than the old communism, because in today's world, with the kind of technology that is emerging, they can do stuff in the world that the communists couldn't only have dreamed of doing, with artificial intelligence, with the manipulation of voting machines and the control of nations through that kind of fraud, you know, with their basically removing and destroying property and food and everything else. It's really a very dangerous time, you know. And then we haven't even talked about transhumanism, which is a whole different ball of wax, but it's basically the emergence of a new kind of a man. It's the Ubermensch, which is half man, half machine. So, you know, we're talking here about the same old stuff that goes back, as Whittaker Chambers said, it goes back to Adam and Eve when, you know, they partook of the forbidden fruit and toyed with the idea of overthrowing God and replacing God with the rule of man. Except now we're dealing with a much more dangerous situation. And you've seen it firsthand over there.
Yeah. And I want to point out too here, Charles, you just touched on something that's so critical for people to understand. Yuval Noah Harari, who's a leading World Economic Forum character. He's very close with Klaus Schwab. His books have been endorsed by Barack Obama, Angela Merkel. I mean, all the world leaders. He's still not very well known to the general public. But this is a guy who's the premise of his book is that we are going to evolve into gods. I mean, it's literally the very same lie from the serpent in the garden.
Homo Deus.
That's right. Yeah. And he says this openly. He goes in a speech and he says, we are evolving into gods. We are becoming gods ourselves with powers of creation and destruction. This is literally the oldest lie in the book. And it's the same lie that the humanists believe, that man is his own little god. We get to determine for ourselves what is the proper system of morality. And it all has its root in the same poisonous idea. And one of the things that was so interesting about Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey believed this as well. They truly regard Lucifer as kind of an archetypal vision of the liberator, of the one who came to bring knowledge to mankind. The serpent was actually liberating Adam and Eve from this oppressive, tyrannical God who was keeping them prisoner in the garden without knowledge of good and evil. And so that's why Alice Bailey called her publishing operation, her foundation, the Lucifer Publishing Company. It's because they regard Lucifer as the good guy in this story, and Jehovah God, Yahweh, as some pronunciations say, he was the bad one. He was the one who was keeping us prisoner in the garden. So it's a total inversion of the biblical account, and it's a total inversion, ultimately, of biblical morality as delivered by God to Moses at Sinai.
That's right. And what we can do as believing citizens, as believing people, in God is to strive to know God and to know truth and to identify this kind of inversion of truth, which is what this is. So, Alex Newman, where can people read your work? And please share your website and any information about yourself.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. So all of my work on the COP27, the UN Climate Conference, I've been going to these since 2009 with the New American Magazine. All that will be at thenewamerican.com. And then if you subscribe to the print magazine, there's going to be some exclusive articles in there about I'm actually writing for the first time ever kind of a gonzo piece, just in first person. You know, what was it like to be there? Because it was so bizarre and extraordinary. So that's available at thenewamerican.com. I've been doing a lot of interviews about this. My personal website is libertysentinel.org. But, you know, I do encourage people to pay attention to what's happening here, Charles, because, you know, it really wasn't reported much in the American media at all. There were over 3,000 journalists at this thing from all over the world. And yet America was almost entirely unrepresented. In fact, as far as I know, we were some of the only ones who were asking serious questions there. My team, we had four people from the New American there, and we were the only ones there that I know of who were kind of skeptical even to what was happening there. But the reason they're not talking about it in the American media is not because it's not important. In fact, it's because it is so important. And they know that if Americans find out what these people are doing, what John Kerry is promising to do, what the plans are with this climate change hoax, the whole thing will come crashing down in an instant. If Americans figured out that this climate change thing was the rationale being used to usher in a new moral system, a new ethical system, a new one world government, planetary controls over every aspect of life, your energy use, your water consumption, your food consumption, they would pull the plug on this thing immediately. The pressure on Congress would be unbearable and the whole charade would stop. That's why they're keeping us distracted with, whatever. Some celebrity did this, some right. broke up with that person. So this stuff is critically important, folks, and we need to be paying attention.
Yep. I also think they were worried about that it might interrupt their 2022 election midterm steal.
But yep.
So, Alex, I want to thank you again for joining me. It's been a great honor and pleasure. Thank you very much. And
thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you for what you do.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the program.
All right. You bet. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.